Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Ryan Tannehill, quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, and I represent the Finsider with the PH.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Finsider Radio podcast. My name is Keith. I'll be your host until 9:30 p.m. Eastern tonight. We've got a great show in store for you. At 8:05 p.m. Eastern, we'll visit with FanDuel writer and former NFL cornerback Brian Witherspoon to talk about last weekend's NFL scouting combine. We'll talk about his favorite prospects and sleepers, the workouts he loved and hated, and how he sees the first eight picks shaking out in April's draft. Brian was a member of the Super Bowl champion 2011 New York Giants. I don't need to remind you who they beat in the Super Bowl that year. It rhymes with Schmatriots, but we'll talk to him a little bit about that as well. At 8:45 p.m. Eastern, Finsider writer and team insider Matthew Cannata will drop by the show to discuss the latest Dolphins news and rumors. There are plenty going around right now, and we always love hearing from Matthew. And we'll also take questions on air and via Twitter. You can give us a call at 347-326-9461, or you can tweet me at Keith Dolphin, which is KeefDolfan. I read tweets during the show often, so if you have any questions and you don't want to call in, you can go ahead and tweet me something, and we'll try to get that question on air. In the meantime, let me introduce you to my panel of co-hosts. And right now, it's just you, Max, from Finsider and Deep End Miami. Max Himmelrich, what's going on?
How's it going?
It's good. I'm looking forward to this show. I'm looking forward to talking to Brian, and got some other stuff that'll come up. I'm interested to hear about the latest rumors going on. Are you sick of talking about Olivier Vernon yet?
I have been sick of talking about Olivier Vernon since before the offseason started. In my opinion, the move is just – it's the move to transition tag him is a little bit ridiculous at this point, considering we tried the same thing last year with Charles Clay, and it's a pretty clear approach for a team to counteract it by simply stacking the deal against one of our other big contracts because we have so many.
Right.
And, it just doesn't make a ton of sense.
Yeah, it's funny because you had everyone on Twitter leading up to when that news came out. A lot of people saying that they didn't expect him to be back, so on and so forth. And then the news came out that they were going to use the transition tag. And then all of a sudden people were like, no, we've got to keep him. So it's amazing how news like that can go ahead and just completely turn people who are pretty much bracing themselves for that kind of news. I wasn't expecting him back. I don't have a problem with it for the most part. I know a lot of people are thinking, transition tag works so well with Charles Clay. Buffalo ended up overspending for that guy, in my opinion. And it's not an awesome contract. So, I mean, I'll take it. It would have been nice to have him back, but not at the price that he wanted. And, I mean, if the Dolphins are set that they think Olivier Vernon's a $12 million a year player, and with that transition tag, it's like, what, 12.73 something million.
Mid-12.
Yeah, so he's getting that. And so they're not giving him the franchise tag money, which would be 15.7. And his camp values him at 14 to 15 million. So they're standing pat on it. And, I mean, they probably will lose. I think a team will sweep in and will give him probably in the range of that 15 million. But, I mean, I had somebody message the site today, and he asked for kind of like a brief write-up on Olivier Vernon and what he brings to the table. And I just said that, I mean, like, he's a good, well-rounded 4-3 defensive end. I mean, he wins with strength. He's good with hand usage. But he's not, like, an explosive, quick-twitch athlete. He's not the kind of guy who just wins with burst and whatnot. I mean, like, he occupies space well. I mean, I talked about his strength. I mentioned the fact that he plays with heavy hands. And when he gets those hands in a lineman's frame, it usually doesn't end well for the offense. So I mentioned that and said that, I mean, like, he's a well-rounded 4-3 guy. I don't think I wouldn't use him as a rush linebacker in the 3-4. I don't know if I'd use the term limited. I mean, it's kind of like how people are looking at Joey Bosa right now, and they're like, well, he looks a little bit limited athletically. And it's like, well, no. I mean, you knew what kind of combo player he was. You know, he's really good at stopping the run. And I mean, like, and he's a very good pass rusher too. But if you're expecting Deion Jordan level athleticism, I mean, you're going to be disappointed. And it's weird that we use Deion Jordan as the comparison tool there, but that's pretty much how it is. So we want to go ahead and welcome real quick, Lewis. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, sorry, Keith. My brother was regaling the family in a new game called Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
Nope. All right.
Yeah. So.
Well, let's just go ahead and we can kick this off first. We'll just go to our first guest. He writes for FanDuel, played 5 seasons in the NFL, and won a Super Bowl ring with the 2011 Giants. Please welcome Brian Witherspoon to the show. Brian, how are you tonight?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me on the show.
No, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. We'll get to the combine specifics momentarily, but first I'd like to ask you about your overall impression of last week's scouting combine. We heard all week about how the offensive linemen were good, the receivers were slow, quarterbacks were all right, and the defensive groups were outstanding. But how did it come across to you?
In comparison to past combines, I thought it was fairly mediocre. There wasn't really a lot of guys who kind of stood out and gave you that wow factor that we're used to seeing from the prospects who get invited to the combine. So, and I was impressed with some of the guys, but like overall, I was pretty much, you know, unimpressed.
Let's talk about some of those guys. Who were your favorite performers last weekend? Did anyone wow you? You know, who surprised you?
Josh Doctson, the receiver from TCU, I was fairly impressed with him. You know, we all saw what he could do on the field, but, you know, coming into the combine, the questions surrounding him was the speed, how is he going to run. Ended up running 4.50, which honestly I think that helped Josh get into maybe the late first round. I can see Josh helping out a team like the Minnesota Vikings who really don't have a downfield presence. And they need somebody who can go downfield and get the ball. You know, they brought in Mike Watts to do that, but he's been unsuccessful. So I think Josh would be a good fit in Minnesota. And I think he did a great job at the combine. Also, Will Fuller, a guy who, you know, we had no questions and no doubts about his speed. The big knock on him was, can he catch the ball naturally? Can he be fluid in his routes? I think he proved everybody wrong at the combine with that. He did a great job of, you know, going through the gauntlet, running the receiver drills that they had to do as far as, like, the routes, slants, digs, out, speed outs. He looked like he was ready. He was ready for the big stage, and he came there, and he impressed.
I will just get right into it from a Dolphins perspective. Let's talk a little bit about Vernon Hargreaves III. He's a popular mock draft selection to Miami right now. As a former cornerback, what do you think of his game?
I think Vernon Hargreaves is the most polished cornerback in the draft. When you watch Hargreaves play, he's just very technical with every little thing that he do. He moves laterally very good. He's always in the right position. You know, at times he has gotten caught, you know, just being a little too aggressive. But, you know, that's what you want in your corner. You want somebody who wants to make plays. Just go out there and compete. And I think, you know, sometimes he lets his aggressiveness take over his mental aspect of the game. But as far as, you know, just being a corner, man, he's great. He's very polished, very fluid. There's no wasted motion in anything that he does. I think the kid can have a great career.
Did you like his combine? Because I know that some of the complaints were early on he looked a little bit nervous, a little bit tight in some of the transition drills. But then when he settled into his comfort zone, I mean, he was wowing people. What did you think?
I love this combine. I think he had the best one out of all the corners. I don't see where people get the stiff part of that from. You know, he was just very, very just technical. You know, chest was over the knees. He was always low. He never rounded any of his breaks off. He was fluid. Like I said, no wasted motion. He showed you that burst out of his back pedal. He accelerated well. And, you know, he just did all the little things, man, caught the ball well. I think he had a superb combine.
I'm going to mention some of the other big name cornerbacks, and you can just tell me, you can tell me a little bit or a lot bit about what you think of these guys. What do you think of Eli Apple?
Actually, you know, me and one of my coworkers, we've been going back and forth about Eli Apple. I think Eli Apple is somewhat on the same level as far as being a technician as Vernon Hargreaves. The only thing that I say that Eli Apple has a problem with is finding the ball. You know, okay. It's one thing to, you know, to be in position to make a play, but I mean, if you don't have any awareness or if you can't locate the ball in the air, I mean, what good are you being in position to make a play if you can't make one?
Right.
So, but I think he came out. You can tell he worked on his ball skills. He caught everything, and he looked pretty fluid as well.
How about Mackenzie Alexander?
I mean, as far as Mackenzie Alexander goes, he's a great talent. He's raw, very athletic, probably the most athletic corner in the draft class. But if I'm an owner or a GM, I'm not drafting a guy in the first 15 picks, in the first 15 picks, and you haven't had any type of production as far as interceptions. Like, I mean, he's a great, great corner, very aggressive, confident, cocky. I love that. I love that about the kid, but I'm sorry. I just can't give you $10 million and you're not getting the ball back for the defense. I can't do it.
I got one more name. William Jackson III out of Houston.
Oh, William definitely rose his stock. And the one knock that I think that's on William Jackson is, you know, he came to the combine and ran 4.3. But when you look on film, he doesn't play at a 4.3. And, you know, people had questions about his speed. You know, I'm pretty sure he wowed a lot of scouts and a lot of teams. But, you know, me personally, I think the 40 is a little overrated when it comes to, you know, being a corner. Because at what time are you really going to run 4.3 or run 4.2 at corner?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're backpedaling the whole time and you're just reading and reacting to everything that's in front of you unless you're getting the ball thrown over your head. But I mean, if you can't move 4.3 while you're breaking to your left or breaking 45 degrees or breaking at a 90 degree angle, then what good is that?
Combine chatter aside, in speaking more in general, do you just have a favorite prospect in this draft class? Someone you really like to watch?
You know what? This is not even had nothing to do with my position at corner or just any position on defense, but, man, we watched film on this kid from Indiana, Jason Spriggs, and I was really excited to see him at the combine, man. When you look on film, he's aggressive. He's always on tape, always in the picture, very, very athletic to be a left tackle. I think he came and he showed that the combine, he tested very well. I think he ran the fastest time out of the O-lineman. He just jumped. He's one of those guys where if you're in the film room and you're watching tape, he jumps out instantly. And from the first time I saw him, I was like, yeah, this is my guy right here. I can't wait to see what he does at the combine.
Yeah, he plays like a bull. His workout – his workout kind of reminded me of Lane Johnson, except that I think that Spriggs is a natural left tackle where people really didn't have that feeling about Lane Johnson. But I mean, Spriggs is everything you said. I totally agree. I'm a huge fan of that guy.
Oh, you definitely.
It's still early. We haven't hit free agency yet, but I mean, if you were looking at the top 8 picks shaking out right now, I mean, do you see any surprises? I mean, you see all the usual names. You're Joey Bosa, you know, Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack. I've seen DeForest Buckner in there. I've seen him outside of the top 8. Do you think any of those guys fall? I mean, I Ramsey obviously the least likely, but I mean, just looking at it, what's your feeling?
Man, honestly, I think I don't even think Bosa is a top five pick, or maybe, let alone maybe even a top 10 pick. And that's just my opinion. I think he's a good football player, but the hype around Joey Bosa is that he's just this great pass rusher. You see all the highlights of, you know, Mike Mayock showing him, you know, bull rushing a left tackle from Illinois, or running a stunt game inside on the guy from Penn State. But it's kind of like, in my opinion, I just look at that as, you know, you played in the Big Ten Conference. The best tackle that you went against all season was Jack Conklin, who I'm really not a fan of. And I just don't understand the hype around this. Like I said, the kid is a great football player. He's strong, he's talented, but as a pass rusher, you don't want someone who's, I think he's stiff, he's kind of robotic, he doesn't use his hands very well. I don't think he has great bend. And to be a successful pass rusher, I mean, you've seen all the successful guys in the league. I know Von Miller's in the league of his own, but even guys like his teammate DeMarcus Ware, like, these are big guys, but they're great benders. You know, they use their hands very well. They're quick. They're explosive. They're fast. You know, and even with J.J. Watt, you know, I don't think J.J. Watt is relatively fast, but he's very explosive. He has a quick first step. And when I look at Bosa, you know, I just don't see that. So, I mean, in my draft, he falls off the top 10. And a guy that I think that can sneak in there is maybe Darren Lee from Ohio, his teammate Darren Lee from Ohio State. Actually, I thought about having him going to Miami, you know, to kind of help the Dolphins out, to add a little more speed to that defense. I think he's a hybrid guy who you can move around, and you can put him on top of displaced tight ends, great in, you know, in pass coverage. Like I said, the kid's fast. He can cover a lot of ground. So if it was just one guy who I think can sneak in the top 10, is Darren Lee from Ohio State.
It's funny you mention Bosa struggling, and then you also mentioned Spriggs, because when Indiana played Ohio State moved Joey Bosa, didn't even bother to put him anywhere near Jason Spriggs, just because, I mean, you could tell that. I mean, that's just it was a bad matchup.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, if you look at this guy on tape, he's never actually going against the best player. Even when Noah Spence was at Ohio State, Noah was the one who was being very disruptive and basically freeing things up for Joey Bosa. It was never just Joey Bosa manhandling guys and just taking over games. Like I said, I think the kid is a good football player, but I don't think he's what everybody's making him out to be.
Now, and like, the other thing is, a lot of
go
people
ahead. Sorry,
said,
go ahead.
Going through the combine, a lot of people said, I mean, they said, oh, he looked really smooth in the drills, he did this. I saw him fall down in the drills. He didn't look overly fluid to me. I mean, a lot of times, it's very interesting to me to see cases in draft in which players' production gets overlooked and mm-hmm. in which players' production actually sees them go up the board. So if we're going to give Joey Bosa credit for his production, then I don't see how we can fault Mackenzie Alexander for his lack of production. I mean, if we're going to, I think if you have to pick one side or the other. You can either say, yeah, but we all saw the combine. I didn't think Bosa was overly impressive. I mean, his film is obviously better than he was at the combine. He's a guy who's going to be better in pads than he is in shorts. But I mean, it's tough to see where he fits in the NFL for me. I mean, mm-hmm. I look at him and I don't know if I see a 3-4 end, a 4-3 end, a linebacker. I mean, but all it takes is one team to fall in love with him in the top five. But I think, you know, you look at what's going on. I mean, a team could make a move up for a quarterback. And then you've got Ramsey and Miles Jack, who are clearly above Joey Bosa right now in, you know, whose stock is rising. Ramsey, probably the best player in the draft outside of Jalen Smith, who just got hurt. But it's hard to look at Bosa. I think you're exactly right, Brian, and see where he fits in and what he really excels at. He's not a guy who has one thing that he's great at.
Yeah, he's a football player. I mean, you
right.
like that guy. He's a football player. You like that. You know, he's gritty. You know, he's going to get down and dirty. You like that. You like that in a football player. You know, he's going to come out there and, you know, and go hard. he's gonna, you know, it's, you know, he, I know he's gonna like talk trash. He's gonna get in guys' faces. He's gonna make his presence felt. But, and you know, that's, like I said, that's fine. I think he's a good football player. But as far as, you know, everybody saying he's just this elite pass rusher, I just don't see it. Like, I've seen big defensive ends. I've seen JPP. I've seen O.C. Uemura. I've seen these guys, and they're big. And they use their hands well. They can move. They're very athletic. They're fast. And that's what you want in an edge rusher. I just don't see that when I look at Joey Bosa. I mean, like I said, he's a great football player. I'll take that. Like I said, it's kind of hard for me to decide where would I put him at in the National Football League.
Max, did you have a question you want to ask?
Yeah, I wanted to ask, Brian, I mean, we talked about the players at the Combine, but I've heard some wildly varying things on what drills do and don't matter for a cornerback. We know that the 40-yard dash is important, but outside of that, what do you think the most important drill is for a corner and the least important drill?
I mean, honestly, I think every drill at the combine, except for the 40, is important for a cornerback, because every drill
really?
There, you're gonna do when you get to, you know, OTAs or mini camp or training camp, as far as, you know, the backpedaling, breaking 90 degrees, backpedaling, breaking at a 45. Backpedaling, turning to run and go find the ball. You know, all those can be translated to the practice field, be translated to, you know, 7-on-7 or team, because, mm-hmm. you know, that's what you're going to be doing. So I think every drill for a cornerback, except for the 40, is, you know, is important.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
This is the part of the show where we have a kind of like a lightning round. And the funny thing is, you already answered the first two questions I had, because you mentioned the prospect most likely to fall out of the top 10. We'll go with Bosa. Prospect most likely to spring into the top 10. You mentioned Darren Lee. You can just give us like short answers on here, and then we'll turn it more into a little bit of a group discussion. Who drafts the third quarterback available in this draft?
Oh, who drafts the third quarterback? I'm going to say the St. Louis Rams. I mean, the L.A. Rams. I'm sorry. LA Rams.
We've all done that.
Every day of my life.
Every day.
Yeah, I'm gonna say the LA Rams, man.
Wentz or Goff?
To who they draft, or who do I think
who
is better?
Who would you take?
Who would I take? I would probably take Carson Wentz. Just because of the fact that like, Goff might be the most NFL-ready, but I kind of think that Goff is pretty much – he's reached that plateau to where I don't think he's going to get any better. But when you have a guy like Carson Wentz, who's somewhat raw but talented, big arm, strong, can run, very smart. The offense that he ran at North Dakota State, they asked him, you know, to read the entire field. And, you know, protect the ball. He doesn't turn the ball over a lot. I like that in a quarterback. I wouldn't say he's really a game manager, but I think he's a guy who can hurt. Like, he might not be as fast as some of the other quarterbacks in the NFL, but I do think that he's a guy who can do it with his legs when need be. And, like I said, you know, he has a big arm. He can throw the ball down the field. That's one knock that's on Goff. Goff doesn't have as strong of an arm. And, you know, in today's league, teams want to go downfield, whether it be the middle of the field or whether it be outside of the numbers. Teams want to go down the field. And I just think in this league now, you got to have a quarterback who can do that, unless you're in like a system is like Alex Smith in Kansas City. But it was a couple times to where when they couldn't get the ball down the field, they struggled in some games. You know, if you can't get the ball down the field, you know, the defense is not really going to respect. Let's say, I mean, well, they'll just bring everybody up, and they just won't respect your receivers. They'll sit on everything. They'll be a little more aggressive, and you know, like I said, that can hurt you. That can hurt a team.
Yeah, speaking of getting downfield, the first team to draft a receiver this year, who do you think it is?
I'm gonna say Detroit. You know, Calvin Johnson is a little indecisive on whether he's gonna come back or not. So I think you got a plan for that. I think Laquon Treadwell fits nice there. You know, another big body, a guy who can be a presence in the red zone for you. Laquon, you know, he's a great yak yard guy. He gets a lot of yards after the catch. So, you know, I think Detroit has to go there.
Who's the team most likely to trade into the top 10?
Ooh, trade into the top 10. Man. I'm going to say the Eagles.
How about trade out of the top 10?
Trade out of the top 10?
Yeah.
Maybe San Diego. They've already made it clear that they're willing to trade their third pick.
And Brian, I got a question for you. I saw something that FanDuel posted on Twitter during Combine Week talking about, like, maybe what you were running at your pro day in 2008 in your 40-yard
yeah.
dash. And that yeah. number made me stop for a second because that number was well below 4.24. But can we talk about that for 1 second, this 4.12 number that they threw out there?
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Were you running a 4.12 at your pro day?
Well, it was actually 4.16, but yeah, I did run it. Yeah, I did run it.
What is it like to run that fast? Does the earth around you begin to blur?
Man, it was just a gift from God, man. You know, my mom.
Do you see like outer space? Do you like see? Do you actually start running so fast that you see into the future?
It's like Superman.
I wish I could.
What are you running now? That's what if you had to run one today?
If I had to run one today, well, you know, I just stopped running professional track last year, so.
So at 3.9.
I was still running. The last time I ran a 40, I clocked in at 4.19.
That's insanity. Wow. I can't even comprehend that number. Like, it's just like when it just breaks the computer, does not compute. I mentioned at the top of the show that you won Super Bowl 46 with the 2011 Giants. Just to summarize that team season, you guys started 6-2, lost 4 straight, got to 7-7. You were fighting for a playoff spot. I remember this well. Everything appeared to change when you played the Jets on Christmas Eve. That was a huge game. You clobbered the Jets that day after they covered up your championships in the hallway. And then you maimed the Cowboys. You win the NFC East. You hammer the Falcons at MetLife. I remember that game well. You beat the 15-1 Packers at Lambeau Field. That was probably my favorite game that entire season. Well, no, that's not true. It's the second favorite. And that was also the second worst officiated NFL game in the 21st century, I think. That was the worst thing. And you know what I'm talking about, right? Exactly. The great Jennings fumble, especially. I thought my dad was going to, because my entire family's filled with Bears fans. I thought my dad was going to throw the TV out the window when that happened. He went nuts. You went to Candlestick in the rain. You beat the 49ers. That was a pretty brutal game. You go to Indianapolis, and then you do us all a favor, and you knock out the Patriots. What was it like to be a part of that season?
Man, that was a very special season, man. You know, that's when I really got to see, you know, the guys who were on the Giants. That's when I really got to see their real character and who they really were. You know, after just dropping all those games, man, you know, the guys we just came together in the locker room and, you know, Justin Tuck and OC, you know, a lot of those guys just, you know, they just said, you know, enough is enough, man. Like, you know, we have all the talent, you know, in the room. That year I felt like, I mean, if you go back and look at the athletes that the Giants have, you know, had on both Super Bowl teams, they, you know, our first, second, and possibly third string guys could have been starters everywhere else on any other team in the league. So, you know, we had a lot of talent. It was just all about, you know, putting it together and getting hot at the right time. And, you know, that's really what it's all about. You know, you can have all the talent in the world, man, but if you don't trust the guy next to you that they're going to do their job and that you're going to also just do yours, then, you know, all that talent doesn't mean anything. And when you get on one accord, I mean, you've seen it, man. Like, could nobody stop us? Like, even, I mean, some plays we weren't even supposed to make, but they were made. Because, you know, I mean, sometimes it just comes together, man. Like, sometimes you can't explain it. Even I remember the Hail Mary pass that Hakeem caught before halftime.
That was awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at that and it's just like, you're just standing there like, wow. Like, how did that, we knew that wasn't supposed to happen, but I mean, when you're rolling, you're rolling. And man, like, we were a family that year. Like, everybody hung out with everybody. Everybody was brothers, man. The locker room was always fun. Guys was always looking out for one another. It was just fun to be a Giant that year.
Hakeem murdered the Packers that day. The one thing I think about before that Hail Mary was Ahmad Bradshaw getting out of bounds when he pretty much ran across the entire field to do that.
Yeah.
Everyone thought you guys were going to kick a field goal. And I remember everyone at the party I was at was like yelling at the TV, like, get out of bounds. And then they thought they were going to kick a field goal. And when Eli threw it, they're like, no, what are you doing? And then Hakeem Nicks caught it. And they're like, yes, that was awesome. So it's funny how quickly that flipped.
Yeah.
So, who was the scariest guy on that defense? Because you had some terrifying guys on that offensive line. You had JPP. You mentioned Umen Yura, who I always think about him in that Packers game when he stripped Aaron Rodgers right as Greg Jennings was pretty much running by himself on that route to the end zone. And, I mean, you mentioned Justin Tuck. Who was the scariest guy on that defensive line?
OC, by far. I've never seen a guy who OC was always smiling, always laughing. He used to always say, he was like, man, I'm not getting my jersey dirty. He was like, I don't believe in getting my jersey dirty. And I've just never seen a guy, man, when he wanted to make a play, he would make a play. He'd be on the sideline. He'd say, Tuck. He's like, you know, guys, I'm about to go get a strip. I'm about to get a sack. I'm about to get a strip sack. Watch me make this play. Y'all just pick it up. And he would go out there, get a sack, strip, fumble, whatever he said he was going to do, he could do it. And that was the first time I ever seen a guy who just played when he wanted to play. I wanted to make a play when he wanted to make a play. Like, it was unreal. So for me, it was OC.
One question I've always wanted to ask, and I always had this theory, but I mean, I'm not able to talk to the 2011 Giants too often. That game against the Packers, there was a point where Prince Amukamara came in that game, and he was expected to cover. And everyone always wondered why Aaron Rodgers really didn't go after him that day. Was it the fact that, because you couldn't really see, did Amukamara just have great coverage? Did Aaron Rodgers just, because it's hard to think that Aaron Rodgers wouldn't exploit a matchup if he had one. What happened that day?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I just think Prince did his job. You know, I know one-on-one in the NFL is open, but, you know, in a big game like that, you know, you don't want to be the guy who costs your team the game by trying to force a pass or force a play. You know, I just think Prince did his job. You know, a lot of people might have thought that, you know, Rodgers should have went after Prince or whatever, but, you know, Prince just did his job. I mean, that's pretty much all I can say about that. I mean, I don't know why Aaron didn't go after him, but, you know, Prince just did his job. And that's what it's all about. Just do your job and everything else will take care of itself.
I just remember all the discount double checks after sacks in that game. That was a lot of fun to watch. I'll never forget that game. That was awesome for so many reasons. How about the Super Bowl? What was it like in the weeks leading up to that game? Because you always hear guys talk about when they're going to play in their first Super Bowl. Those 2 weeks are just like an absolute blur. So what was that like?
I mean, honestly, man, they're right. It is a blur. I don't even remember everything that happened, man. You know, just being out there in Indy. Having a good time, going to the practices, coming back, you know, just having fun, you know, still working hard at the same time. But it went by fast, man. Like, it was a blur. So, I mean, everybody was just focused on, you know, just doing their job that week and hopefully coming out with the victory, as we did.
What do you remember about that game? Because, I mean, that was both Giants-Patriots games were just incredible Super Bowls. And when you look at, I mean, if you enjoyed defense, you enjoyed the most recent Super Bowl. I mean, I loved it and whatnot. But those Giants-Patriots games are going to go down in history as some of the best ever played. So, I mean, what do you remember from that game?
When Wes Welker dropped that ball.
Yeah, we were all about that.
I'm just sorry, but, man, Chase Blackburn, man, an interception that he had.
Covering Gronkowski.
That wasn't even Chase's guy. Chase just went and made a play. That wasn't even Chase's guy, man. I don't even know how he got – we don't even know how Chase got there. Let's say, you know, we see Chase jumping up in the air and making a pick.
He just boxed him out. Like, it was awesome to watch.
Yeah, like, Chase, where you get those hops from? Like, nobody knew where any of that came from. That was probably –
were you ever worried
about
that game?
Man, look, anytime you're going against Brady, man, you're always worried about giving Tom Brady too much time to, you know, to do what Brady does. So, yeah, everybody was worried.
I remember feeling a sigh of relief when Justin Tuck got him on third down and, you know, did the whole bow, the whole samurai thing. And I was just like, oh, man. And then, of course, you know, Brady connects on fourth down. I think Deion Branch is the one who caught that fourth down conversion. Went down the field. He had the penalties. I think they went deep once, missed it. I mean, I don't live around a lot of Dolphins fans, so I mean, a lot of people around here don't share my complete contempt for the Patriots. But I remember watching that last play when Brady dropped back and Jason Pierre-Paul almost got him, and I was like, please, somebody just drop this guy right now. But what was going through your head on that play?
Man, just knock it down. That's what was going through my head after he threw it. And thank God that Deion Grant did. And if you go back and look at that play, Gronkowski almost caught that ball. If he would have been a step closer, he would have caught the ball, and probably would have just walked in the end zone. So
that would have been worse than how they won Super Bowl 49 if that had happened. That would have crushed me.
Yeah, that would have been a heartbreaker. But he almost if he was a step faster, he would have caught that ball.
If he didn't have the boot on?
If he didn't have the boot on, he would have caught the ball.
But he looked okay when he was partying later on. You remember that. He's partying with his shirt off. He looked fine then.
Yeah, he sure did.
Anyone, you guys have any questions for Brian? I'm not sure how much time he has to stick around, but it's not every day that we get to talk to players on this show, so fire away.
Yeah, I have a question for Mr. Brian Witherspoon, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, sir.
Okay, sir.
All right.
Be gentle, Lewis.
What? Yeah, be gentle indeed. Mm-hmm. What was the weirdest Super Bowl commercial you watched this year?
The weirdest Super Bowl commercial. Was it the one with the monkey in it?
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, no. Oh, my God, that haunts my nightmares.
Yeah, the one with the little monkey in it. Yeah, that was weird, man.
Puppy monkey.
I drank two of those today, by the way.
And maybe the little hot dogs running to the ketchup. That was pretty funny. That was pretty funny.
The Prius. Okay,
well, that's
so
still going on.
I got a question for you guys.
Okay.
I have a question for you guys. All right. We're talking about the quarterbacks earlier. If there had to be one guy who might get looked over and who could possibly be a Tom Brady in this draft, who do you think it is?
Ooh, that's tough.
Dak Prescott.
I think if you're – it's a good one. I think if you're going with pure talent, I mean, I don't know if I've seen a player with an arm like Cardale Jones ever. I mean, so if he can get his head right and if he can understand the game and really let it play out in front of him, then he can do some special things just with his physical gift. I think if a team lets him develop, he could be a really good player.
Mm, that's a good one. That's a good one.
But that requires time to develop, and that's not something that actually happens in this league very much anymore.
Well, it happens, sure does. It happens with the good franchises. You know, it happens a lot of the time. I mean, you see players, you know, Eli Manning didn't start right away. He sat behind Kurt Warner for a little while. Aaron Rodgers obviously sat behind Brett Favre. I mean, Brady sat
behind
Bledsoe.
Max, how about somebody who actually is in modern time? Because Eli, how long has Eli been playing now? How long has Aaron Rodgers been playing now?
Aaron Rodgers is modern time. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is...
No, he's not. Really Brett Favre, he took over when Brett Favre left. How long has Brett Favre been out of the league now?
Well, he's been away from the Packers
for period?
8 years.
6 years? 6 years? Whatever
eight
the
years.
Hall of Fame period is.
Since about 2000. 8 or 9.
He retired after the Giants went up to Lambeau and knocked those guys out in that game that was below zero. That was Favre's last game in at Lambeau, and he threw that awful interception in that game. So, just saying.
That's why I say it's like NFL quarterbacks, NFL anything really. Like I like this. Somebody that said this. I don't remember who it was that said it, but essentially it was the idea that athletes coming out of college are better than ever. And the fundamentals just couldn't be worse.
Like
you literally have you
Bruce
literally
Arians
have to.
Yeah, that was Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians said that.
Well, he's not wrong, man. He's not
yeah,
wrong.
I mean, that's true. That's true, man.
And I mean, it happens in college too. Guys are, you know, you see fewer guys returning, more guys coming in and playing right away, so they don't get the time to learn the position in college. And then they get to the pros. And it really doesn't even come down to rushing players onto the field. It comes down to rushing coaches off the sidelines. I mean, and we're so quick to fire head coaches and so quick to move on. I mean, we saw what the Browns did with Chudzinski.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back when Tom Landry started with the Cowboys, he didn't win a single game his first year. He won like 2 or 3 games his second year. Same thing again his third year. Fourth year, they went 500 and missed the playoffs. And then he started with. Can you imagine a coach lasting through 0-16, 2-14, and like 3-13 now? No, they'd be gone after the first season, and they wouldn't have a chance to develop, and they wouldn't have a chance to develop their players in their scheme, and it would be a mess.
Yeah, man, that's why, you know, I love what the Rams are doing with Jeff Fisher, man. Even though he's had 4 straight losing seasons, you know, if you look at his draft picks, Jeff Fisher has been dead on with his draft picks. Aaron Donald, Tavon Austin.
Robert Quinn.
Robert Quinn, yeah. You know, Janoris Jenkins, even though he's kind of being a prick right now. Tremaine Johnson. You know, Fisher has hit on a lot of his draft picks.
Yeah,
so,
and
you know,
I mean, the other guy, Jason Britt, same thing. He's sticking around. He's stuck on for a while in Dallas.
Yeah, so, you know, owners don't – like, the NFL is so predicated now on you have to be successful right away. But that's not how it works. You can't fire a coach every 1 to 2 years and expecting things to change. You're just going to keep going through that same old cycle. It's kind of like a dog eating his own vomit. It's not going to work. It's nasty.
That's funny. Hey, Brian, we have our next segment coming up. I don't know if you want to stick around and you can in chat with us. You're definitely invited to do so. Or if you want to go ahead and call it at any time, but you're definitely welcome to go ahead and stick with us. We're just going to bring in our insider and talk some information. So that's up to you.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'll stick around about 5 more minutes. That's cool.
All right, cool. We're going to bring on our next guest. I'm pretty sure this is Matthew Cannata. He's from Connecticut. What's up?
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
It will never cease to amaze me how we can have a Dolphins insider in Connecticut, which is Patriot country.
Isn't that a little crazy?
I was under the impression there's a decent amount of Dolphins fans in Connecticut, actually.
There actually are a good amount.
Uh-huh.
They're in hiding. They get lynch mobbed.
Yeah, I was watching a game up in
around and whatnot.
I was in Watertown, Connecticut, where my brother goes to boarding school for a Dolphins game 1 week, and I went to the
Watertown?
Bar. Taft School. In Watertown,
yeah,
and I was
that's where my wife is from.
Oh, that's so funny. And so we went
Taft
to...
Taft right down the street from her, actually.
Yeah, we went to a bar near there to watch the game on Sunday. And it was like all... It was... I don't know if you guys remember that Dolphins-Patriots game. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago when we had the lead in Foxborough and then blew it, like blew 20-0 lead or something ridiculous like that. I don't remember the exact score. But I remember sitting there and we were watching and it was all Patriots fans. Right as I'm walking out, like 4 people wearing Ricky Williams jerseys walked in. I mean, there's a contingent everywhere. Dolphins fans are all over the place. I know there are a decent number out here in California.
They're everywhere except Miami.
Yeah. If you go to South Carolina, they're everywhere. I love it. There's even like, I'll catch like a decent, I'll always see a person who's wearing a Dolphins hat out here or something. The thing to Lewis's point, every time I go down to South Florida, I always see people wearing like those ugly throwback Patriots jerseys and everything. And I just think, why? Why are you here?
Jets, Cowboys, Steelers,
Giants.
Those guys are everywhere. My boss is a big, and you have to call them the Stillers. That's how they, and
Packers.
It, too. That's, yeah, Packers are everywhere. Those teams travel
Packer
so
fans,
well.
Yeah.
Pack fans. Yeah, you can't escape them. I went to, because I live in, out probably like 50 minutes outside of Chicago, and I went to Buffalo Wild Wings to watch some game, and that place was, during a game, was like 75% Packers fans, and I was just like, where am I? Like, I felt, thought I was like in northern Wisconsin or something.
So Matthew, what do you got for us?
Let's see. Where do you want to start? I got a lot for you guys. I can't remember what I talked about last week.
We talked draft needs. We talked about the team's desire to really go defensive line. Let's talk Olivier Vernon, Lamar
so
Miller.
Since last week, so I got some tidbits on that. First of all, let's start with Lamar Miller. I'd be shocked if Lamar Miller is not a Miami Dolphin this coming season and for years to come. All signs right now are pointing towards the team and Lamar Miller working out a deal for him to stay in Miami. Adam Gase likes him a lot. Lamar Miller wants to stay here. They have a very good relationship with Drew Rosenhaus. Mike Tannenbaum does. And just the team in general, since they have so many clients with the Dolphins and whatnot, and since Rosenhaus is based out of there, based down in Miami. Lamar Miller should be a Miami Dolphin. Again, I'd be very shocked if he hit the free agent market. Dolphins might have to overpay him a little bit to get him to stay, but I think in the end they'll have a very good deal that works for both sides. As far as Vernon goes, you've seen the reports. We've all seen the reports. They put the transition tag on him at $12.7 million. The franchise tag was $15.7 million. So that just shows you that they have their value set on him, and it's obviously not anything close to the franchise tag. I would guess that it's between 12 and maybe $14 million. They probably would maybe go to $14 million, but I don't know if they really would. They're going to let Vernon negotiate the contract out on the free agent market and see what he comes back with. Vernon did tell the Dolphins that he would give them the first chance to match anything that he received on the market. But the Dolphins just wanted to make sure they had that possibility by placing the transition tag on him. So that guarantees them that option. They could have already decided that they're not going to match anything, but if they force a team into overpaying for him, then they can hold that other team hostage. For example, the Jacksonville Jaguars are very interested in Olivier Vernon. They have a ton of cap room. They're also not coincidentally, interested in Bruce Irvin, who the Dolphins are very interested in, and perhaps a number of other Dolphins targets that they want to bring in. So here's where it gets tricky. So the Jaguars with a ton of cap space might decide, hey, we need to pay Olivier Vernon about $15 to $16 million per year to get him to come, and the Dolphins can say, well, I think the Dolphins have, three or four days to match the offer. So they might take the entire 3 or 4 days to match the offer and then say at the very end they're not going to match it. That ties up the Jaguars because they really can't do much once that contract and the offer sheet is out there on the market. They have to wait on the Dolphins' decision before they can really move forward with their other guys. And, they might have a plan A, plan B. Their plan A is Olivier Vernon, and their plan B is Bruce Irvin, but they plan on moving him to defensive end out there, and that complicates things as well. So the Dolphins, a lot of people said they don't understand the transition tag. I even said myself I don't understand the transition tag being put on Vernon, but after thinking it through, it kind of makes a ton of sense, especially if the Dolphins think that they're not going to get him back, but they're just kind of playing a little bit of gamesmanship right now.
How was it for them at the combine? How was it for them at the combine? Did they have any particular prospects of interest with their interviews?
No, that information is kept very confidential. It's very hard to get information out of there. I did mention Mehdi Ahmedabad from Boston College, not with the Dolphins. But that is the only information I was able to pry out of there besides the other confirmed visits with the offensive lineman from Stanford and a few others. But that information from the combine is very confidential, kept very tight. The hotel is across the street from the stadium. It's armed by security at all exits, all entrances. No sponsors are let in. No agents are let in. No beat reporters are let in. So really, it's the team executives and those guys in that room with the Dolphins that night. None of them are leaking information out to anyone. So that information is really not getting anywhere. I did try to reach out to the representation for Miles Jack, but I did not hear back from them. They're keeping things quiet as well. But I, if I had to put money on it, I would say the Dolphins did meet with him as well.
Per my source, they did meet with Miles Jack.
I've also heard that they met with him.
Yeah. Man, I want sources. I'm the only guy in this show who doesn't have them.
Hey, I got set up on that end, being at UCLA. That's one end that I'm set up on.
Enjoy the advantage. Enjoy it. That's fine. That's what I get for being up here.
Matthew, I got another question for you.
Do
you have any interesting takeaways from that article? I don't know if any of the listeners read Jenny from Monday Morning Quarterback. I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name. Brentes?
Brentes.
Jenny published from the Block, right?
Yeah, she published article. Great article.
Very good.
They let her sit in on a meeting with a prospect, a quarterback, and it was the Miami Dolphins that let her sit in. So what were your main takeaways from that article?
Yeah, so that was a very good article. They did change a few things around. I did try to do some research on that and try to figure out who the quarterback was based on the information that was in the article, and nothing matched up. So someone actually tweeted out the other day, I think it was yesterday, that they did a little more research and then found the information to match what they were looking up. And it was actually Nate Sudfield, from Indiana, was the quarterback that they were talking to. And then I looked back at their drives against, Michigan State, and sure enough, the exact, plays were in there, but it wasn't the first drive of the game like it was mentioned in the article. It was the second drive of the game. So Sudfield did meet with the Dolphins. I had mentioned a few weeks ago that Dolphins were wanting to move on from Matt Moore. They wanted to get a fresh face in there. I think I even mentioned this on the show last week, I think. Or I mentioned on the Finn Maniac show the other day. They're ready to move on from Matt Moore. They want to draft a quarterback to groom under Ryan Tannehill. Whether or not Ryan Tannehill is the answer still remains to be seen with his coaching staff. They do believe in him. They do think he has all the talent in the field. They want to see if he puts it together this year. But they also want to have that insurance just in case. So don't be surprised if the Dolphins draft a quarterback on the third day this year, probably rounds 5 or 6, I would have to guess.
I actually have a question, and this is for, is Brian still with us?
Yeah, I'm still with you.
Okay. So Max just brought up that article. I don't know if you talked about it already, but if you didn't, I was actually curious. What was your combine? Did you go to the combine? I wasn't following football that closely, so I didn't know, but if you did.
Actually, I did not go to the combine, but I did.
Oh, okay. Do you know any teammates who did? Like, what was their combine experience like with the interviews and stuff? Because I've heard some pretty scary things about those interviews.
Yeah, I had a couple friends who told me that. One guy said they knew that he liked to drink, so when they walked in, they were already drinking some alcohol, and they asked him what his favorite drink was. So... like stuff like that. Another one of my friends said he walked in and they asked him about his eighth grade school counselor. One of my friends, it's crazy. Even on formal visits, to meet the staff at their facilities, they ask crazy questions like that. So I mean, basically, man. Like, that whole process, even, like, going through a pro day or even just going on formal visits, it's more so of a mental thing to try to throw you off, see how you're going to react, see how you're going to respond, see if you're going to crack under pressure. It's basically a mental game. They just do it to be a dick.
Can't get much more blunt than that.
They will mentally mess up with you just to see your reaction. Those individuals are brutal out there.
Well,
it's not about
sense.
The physical thing, because they know you can get it done on the turf. I mean, you know, they've seen all your tape, so it's more seeing how you do under pressure. And I mean, I feel like they've almost like how we've made a little game out of asking about it. I feel like they've almost made a little game out of it. Like, it's fun for them to figure out like how they can make this, like how they can make these questions as weird as possible. They asked them, I forget which prospect it was. I think it might have been Carson Wentz or Paxton Lynch, one of the two, who said the weirdest question they got asked was, if a bus was bearing down a hill and your brakes stopped working, what seat would you sit in?
Oh. Back of the bus.
Right, back of the bus. But, I mean, like, what?
I had abandoned ship.
Exactly. Jump out the window.
Well, Brian, you're running faster than the bus at 4-2-1. I mean, we're all stuck in the bus.
And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, last time I ran like a 4.19. It was no big deal.
Nah.
It's funny, though.
But I have – who do you guys – okay, Max, I know you asked me about Brent Grimes. What's your take on Brent? What do you have against Brent?
I don't have anything against
Brent. Not Brent. It's not Brent.
Okay, no, Lewis, it is a little bit. I mean, it is. Let's be completely honest. I can put up with Miko if Brent is producing. But the problem is when Brent starts declining, that's when, you know, it's the same thing when you talk about players who have off-the-field issues. You can tolerate it. You can tolerate it sometimes when they're good players. I mean, you look at it, and Brent and Brian, I would love to have you weigh on this because this is obviously your area of expertise. When you're a corner who's one smaller like Brent, I mean, he's 5'9 on a good day, and you play entirely with athleticism. I mean, we know Brent isn't a technician. He plays based on his ridiculous vertical. I mean, we all saw the game against Detroit.
Yeah.
That was bad coverage. And he was able to compensate just by having ridiculous athleticism. But when you start aging, it becomes harder to recover every week. It becomes harder to be on the top of your game week in and week out. So it's not as easy for Brent Grimes to get it done every week. He'd have good games here and there. Like, he had a good game against Tennessee because we were coming off the bye week. He had an extra week to let his body get right. You know, he's had the Achilles injury. I think he's still a starting corner in the NFL. He's still a starting level corner, but I think just tough for him to make his athletic plays with decreased athleticism.
Well, I think you got to also look at, you know, what they're really asking him to do. And, you know, I watched film on the Dolphins today. They run a lot of too high. It looks like they're running a lot of too high, cover four, and mixing in a little cover two Kathy, things like that. And I know the plays that you're talking about when Brent seems like he's beat and he uses his athleticism to kind of make up for it, but a lot of those plays that I saw today while watching the film, it almost looked like that the Dolphin was in like a cover two Kathy look, and he was supposed to kind of – he was playing deep to short.
Can you tell us what that look is, what the terminology is? Because the terminology varies for a lot of teams. What that cover two, you say, Kathy?
Yeah, cover two, Kathy. You know, it's basically where, as a corner, it can mean a lot of things. Cover two, Kathy could turn into cover two buster, where you have to read the M-man on the line of scrimmage. If he blocks down, you're immediately into the run fit. You're a part of the run game now. And using on cover two Kathy, you want to force the guy inside to, you know, kind of help the safety out. Linebackers getting depth inside to become harder for the quarterback. And, you know, like I said, a lot of times they tell you to play that deep to short. You don't stay on top of the receiver. You kind of hang back. just in case you get that quick out by the tight end or that running back out the backfield. And like I said, I've seen, you know, just by watching the film today, I've seen the Dolphins doing a lot of that. And plus, you guys were ranked last against the run, man. So you kind of, if you're on the field every play, you know,
yeah,
sure the Dolphins were playing about 60 snaps a game. That's a lot of snaps.
Pass rush wasn't doing him any favors.
Yeah,
linebackers
weren't
doing him any favors. He was on an island. And I mean, the other thing was, you know, usually you have safety help as a corner. Brent Grimes didn't have a lot of safety help because Rashad Jones had to come down and play linebacker. Rashad Jones was the best linebacker last year. Rashad Jones led the team in tackles. He's coming down. He's in the box. And when you're a corner at 30-some years old and you look behind you and you say, damn, my safety is down in the box, and you've got Sammy Watkins in front of you, you're stuck.
It's hard to play man coverage every snap in the NFL, let alone 60 out there for 60 plays. So I think, like I said, I watched the film on Brent today. I think Brent does a good job of kind of holding his own. I mean, you know, the receiver, they get paid too. You know, so, you know, they're out there doing what they're supposed to do. I mean, I can't admit there were a few times where I was looking at, you know, Grimes, like, what are you doing? You look like World Be Free out there. What are you doing? I mean, tough, man. Playing corner is tough. It's tough.
I don't doubt that playing corner is tough. And Max brought up the whole Brent being an issue thing, but and his production. But truthfully, like, I don't hammer Brent nearly as hard as a lot of people do. Really, the problem, and Brian, I don't even know if you want to chime in on this because it's kind of going a little past the realm of football in a way, but really the biggest problem I have is Miko herself. I mean, she's become what she is, the self, I don't know if she's self-proclaimed or somebody wrote this on her. I think it was, Mike Freeman. She's the NFL's truth teller or whatever. And she comes up with all these crazy things to say all the time. She's always angry, always calling people out. And a lot of it, like some of it is probably not warranted. And yet a lot of it is probably brought on herself. And some of the things that she says, like she's trying to be the truth teller. She's trying to be all these things, saying everything that Ryan Tannehill sucks. And the Dolphins will never win as long as he's the quarterback while her husband is on the team right now. And people say that nobody cares, everybody's on my side, and then we hear that it's not a hunt, that's not the case. So you hear all these things, you see all this stuff that she's trying to bring up to the surface. She's either making it up, or either she's making it up or she's airing out dirty laundry, neither of which is a good thing for the team. So it's kind of hard to be okay with this thing.
Brian, what's your take? If you're as a former player, if that kind of thing happened to you and your wife in this case was sounding off.
Right, you were with the Giants. What would happen if some defensive player's wife suddenly went out about how Eli Manning was just awful?
I mean, I'm going to go to him and be like, yo, man, you know, that's not helping the team any. You know, I don't know what you guys are pillow talking about at night, but I mean, I would probably say, man, something needs to be done about that because she's making you look bad. No, she's really not, you know, it all falls back on you. That's your, you know, that's no disrespect, you know, to Grimes, but I've seen her, you know, on Twitter. But, I mean, that's an in-house thing. He has to take care of that. I mean, I don't want to get out of line, you know, and say anything, but, you know, he has to take care of that. Do I think it's right? No, I'll just leave it at that, but I definitely don't think that's right.
That's pretty much all we can say. I mean, if it was just pillow talk, then fine, whatever. But she's treating it like she's essentially giving out these big secrets and trying to, I don't know. I don't want to say anything else because it's making speculation.
And the other thing is though, one thing that
I was just going to say
go for it.
Grimes,
go ahead,
Brian. My name is Keith. The one thing I was going to bring up with this is, I mean, every time that Brent, when they asked him about it in person, he has passed the buck. He hasn't taken ownership of it. It's always, it's her call. I have no idea what's going on. He acts like there was one interview he did where he acted like he had
no idea what she said.
So, I mean, like, and I agree with everything Brian said, and that has been the opposite of what we've seen from Brent Grimes, which just furthers my point that in no way was this handled well in-house. The team with filled in there, and then man Campbell, like you just didn't see any ownership of it. Like nobody was willing to do anything. And then the quarterback sits there and everyone wonders why he feels like people don't have his back. This is a shining example of why.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you look at the situation with Miko, and it's also something that you never really have to deal with because most players' wives understand that you can't do that. It's just not outworked.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going on with Brent. I don't know why he is okay with that. But I mean, it's not that she can't have an opinion. Obviously she can have an opinion. And I mean,
everybody has an opinion,
right? If she were to express it differently, and if she were to treat the fans in a different way and understand what's going on with the team,
be more tact with her words.
Well, not even that. The other thing is she's reflecting views. She's reflecting facts that she passes off as facts that aren't necessarily true. I know that the offensive players on that team do not dislike Ryan Tannehill. And she comes out there and she says, and this could be just her having to watch her words, because I don't know how the defensive players feel about him. But when she comes out and says the whole team hates Ryan Tannehill, that's false. I can tell you for a fact that those offensive linemen and those receivers outside of, you know, when Mr. Wallace got shipped off to the North.
Don't forget Gibson and Hartline.
Well, I mean, we sent Brian Hartline to the worst place on earth, Cleveland. But it's
Yeah, exactly.
But it's very difficult to know how to deal with the situation, because I don't know if it's ever happened in NFL history when a player's
Tom Brady's wife.
But
oh, Giselle. But that one went about, well, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I remember that Super Bowl.
That happened,
totally,
but that was
tossed Wes Welker under the bus.
That was
it was pretty funny.
But that was
She did it like three times.
Okay. Miko continues to name names and drop F-bombs and say, I hope that these three beat reporters get expletive by Magic Johnson's expletive.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I mean, which is, yeah, she said that the three A's,
Armando, Adam, and
Brian, those are three of the Dolphins beat reporters who Miko is not taking a liking to, because there's one Dolphins beat reporter who does not feel the need to report when Brent Grimes struggles. But it's a very interesting situation, especially for Dan Campbell to have to deal with, because Dan Campbell says, look, I can barely manage the football stuff. This is my first time doing any of this. Now you want me to deal with a player's wife? I mean, it's ridiculous. And the other thing is Adam Gase won't tolerate it.
So that'll happen.
Adam Gase will not tolerate any of that. I mean, if
maybe
Adam
that's
Gase,
why she said F this team.
Well, I mean, that team's going to F her.
That needed to happen then.
That team's
going to
F her, and then she's going to end up hurting her husband. When you go out in free agency and you're going to think about signing Brent Grimes, she comes into consideration. She has to.
We had no idea at the time. But when we signed him in 2013, I remember on the site a couple of Falcons fans came over, and it was real cryptic, but they're like, ha, good luck. And I was like, well, what does that mean? Like, is his Achilles not fully healed? I don't get it. And then as soon as she started up, I was like, oh, that's what they meant. And it's just
she started off on that team, too. She said something like she was catching heat, and she said that one of the Falcons' corners was straight up bad. And, like, people got mad at her for talking poorly about Brent's old teammates. And it's just a whole situation where I don't understand what she's gaining. I don't understand what she's gaining. She's not gaining anything. Well, she's not gaining
basically
a following, because once Brent stops playing, she's done.
No, you're wrong on that. You know why? She claims she's a journalist all the time, Max. She is making a following for herself so that when Brent eventually stops playing, she will still have a following, because she is not just Miko Grimes, wife of Brent Grimes. She is Miko Grimes, internet personality, and perhaps even sideline reporter, like she keeps saying
Lewis,
she wants to be again.
There's no way. I'm going to tell you right now, Lewis.
I didn't say that.
A following is different from a respected career. You can have a following, I mean, you know, DJ Khaled's got a following, but he's not winning any Grammys. I mean, so
all right, Max, I'm gonna get up out of here, man.
Okay,
it's getting a little too hot. It's getting a little too hot. Here.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Let's no, Brian, really appreciate having you around. Sports writer for FanDuel. You can follow him at Spoonie29 on Twitter. We hope to have you back.
Oh,
at some
I miss
point.
Spoon.
Yeah, before the draft. I mean, love the insight, and hopefully you can come back and talk to us before we draft April 28th.
Anytime, man. You know, you just hit me up, and I'm there.
Awesome. All right,
I'll
talk to you
so
soon, Brian. Thanks so much for coming on.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, so a couple of things.
We chased our guest off.
Well, I mean, like, it's something that, like, we've kind of held off on talking about this, and Matthew Cannata has
– Is Matt even still here? Hello?
No, he'll be back. I got to message him and let him know that because he said he had a couple of more tidbits he can share. But, no, the thing about Miko is if she's going to put it out there that she's a journalist, that's fine. But it's just not anything you can take seriously. Like, when I think of her, I think about these rampages and, like, penis cakes and everything. And, you know, and it just doesn't really work. So, yeah, if you want to build up that following, that's fine. And honestly, on Twitter, you can probably do that. But, I mean, she's not going to be with this team much longer. What was the rumor that they're already looking for houses in, like, Southern California or something?
Yeah, on her Snapchat story, she posted something about house hunting in California.
Yeah, so, I mean, whatever.
Coming to your hometown, Mac. Well, she's not your hometown, where you're currently at.
So, yep. I mean, it's fine. I don't really care. So, but it's embarrassing, and I can, when people were saying, like, well, why doesn't Tannehill feel like the team has his back, that's a great example of it. Like, you can't have that on a team. You can't. It just doesn't work. And then people wonder why that guy feels insecure about things, and it's like, well, that there's your reason. So I'm just messaging Matthew now. I'm interested to hear what else to the show. He'll call back in a moment.
How about have you guys discussed, have we discussed the Koumissi restructure yet?
No, we haven't mentioned that yet. Would you like to talk about it?
Well, sure. A restructure. Well, okay. Thank you. So the whole thing, I really don't know how I feel about the whole idea of a Koumissi restructure. If we can safely speculate that eventually Vance Joseph wants to go to 3-4, I mean, I got some weird looks the other day when I suggested that the Dolphins were eventually going to switch to 3-4, but obviously I'm referring to like 2017 and beyond, because 2016 he said already he's going to be in the 4-3 because the personnel currently on the team is better suited for a 4-3. That doesn't mean it's going to be what he wants to do forever. So if Koumissi is restructured, that usually means that he's going to wind up having a contract extension, which means he's going to be with the team even longer. So some people are going to be unhappy about that because, oh God, Koumissi is going to stick around even longer. The Joe Philbin era continues because everybody loves Koumissi. But I digress. I believe in college, Koumissi was a 3-4 outside linebacker. He was a pass rusher, right?
No, he's a 4-3 D end with Utah.
Oh, okay. Either way, he's a pass rusher. So I got my 3-4, 4-3 mixed up. But in any case, Koumissi's a pass rusher, and we're trying to make him cover. We're trying to make him do all these things. But in essence, what he's always been good at is pass rushing. So if Miami is bringing him on, and let's say he does get the chance to be a 3-4 outside linebacker because he can pass rush, then what you are doing is essentially trying to say, well, may see what happens if Koumissi is doing what he's good at again. How often do we see Koumissi blitzing the quarterback? I rarely ever see it. If he was in the middle, he's covering people. On the outside, he wasn't really doing much. He's in run support or whatever. So in my mind, this is finally the way of Gase saying, well, I've seen what this guy can do when he actually runs the pass rushes. So let's extend him, get a little cap space back, and maybe we can turn him into what he was good at again.
I don't know. I mean, it's fine. It saves us money.
I just want to say he's never been a really, really good pass rusher. He's been an okay pass rusher. He's been okay at a lot of things, but
yeah,
quote unquote good or really great at any. And so it's something where he is a placeholder at linebacker for right now, and that's fine. He can be a placeholder. As long as Kelvin Shepard's not on the field, we're fine. you know, Jelani Jenkins is a player who has a lot of potential. The only thing that I want to make sure is that the team allows Jelani Jenkins to play next season. And I think it will happen, you know, with Vance Joseph coming in. You know, we're not dealing with that stigma against playing rookies anymore that we were dealing with in the Joe Philbin regime. So I think, and by rookies and young players, Jelani will get time to play, but I hope that they don't try to do anything with Koa Misi on the weak side or with, I mean, Koa could move down to defensive end if need be. I don't know why they didn't do it a little more last year, probably just because they didn't have any linebackers. But if there is enough linebacker depth and there's an injury on the defensive line, he provides a little bit of flexibility because he can come down there and play defensive end. So it's always good, you know, when you can look at a guy on game day and say, okay, we're dressing you as the you know, fifth defensive end and as the fifth linebacker. You know, you have those guys who can kind of play both and who can knock out two things. So it's an interesting decision to restructure him. You know, he must really want to stay in Miami and realize that if he got cut, the amount of money he would get signed for is probably less than even the restructured amount of money. But it's a good move by the team. They're saving some money.
Matthew Cannata's back. Hey, buddy.
What's up, guys?
Yeah, we got off track. We just started talking about Miko. It turned into a whirling dervish, but I didn't want to cut you off before you were able to discuss everything that you've got in terms of info right now. So what's up?
All right, so let me start up with some positions. I tweeted out a bunch of this stuff already, so let me just move on from there. Looking back at the cornerback position, as I mentioned the other day, the Dolphins are very upset that Trumaine Johnson got tagged in St. Louis. He was going to be their number one target at the cornerback position. So, you know, that puts a wrench into everything, basically. You got Janoris Jenkins out there, but the Dolphins aren't really sold on him. And then the problem is now he's going to get the most amount of money on the market. And then it's going to be a trickle-down effect from there. So if they're going to go after cornerback in free agency, they're going to have to pay. And I mentioned last week and Max actually mentioned this too earlier this week on Twitter, that the Dolphins would like to move on from Brent Grimes only if they can get a replacement for him. The problem is, who is that replacement going to be? You can tackle that in the draft with a number one cornerback. You're going to have Vernon Hargraves there at number eight. You're going to have Mackenzie Alexander possibly there at number eight, who can be a lockdown corner. He showed it plenty of times in college. You can go through free agency, but the problem with free agency is who's really available. You got Hayward from Green Bay, great zone player, poor tackler. You got Prince Akamura, who's injury prone and hasn't really lived up to his first round potential that he was drafted in. The rest of the cornerbacks, are they truly number ones? Pacman Jones, he is getting linked to Miami. I've mentioned him several times to Miami, but let's face it, there's going to be competition for him. The Bengals want to keep him. The Cowboys are in place for Pacman Jones. There's the Jaguars may be in favor of Pacman Jones. There's going to be a lot of competition for him. And Pacman Jones isn't stupid. He needs to make it rain at the strip clubs. He's going to go for the most amount of money. And so is it going to be a bidding war for Pacman Jones? It could possibly get that way. Dolphins are very afraid of. One source told me that he believes this defense can be worse than last year's defense, if you can even believe that fact or that statement, just because of the way the prices are shaping up to be right now in the free agent market, especially at the cornerback position. So it's a very, very scary thing that's going on right now in terms of prices and whatnot. From there, Morris Claiborne has been mentioned a little bit from Dallas. He had a good year last year, but he's been inconsistent throughout his career so far. So the Dolphins will need to weigh that as well. One source told me that he can see the Dolphins going cornerback two picks in a row, the first and second round, if they don't get what they want to happen in free agency. So that's going to be very interesting to watch. They're definitely going to have to overpay if they want to go cornerback in free agency. The linebacker position we saw today, Koa Misi, was restructured, so they're going to keep him. They are pretty happy with Jelani Jenkins. He's going to compete for a starting spot, of course, but he'll most likely lock one of those spots down. A lot of people are talking Miles Jack to the Dolphins at number eight. I love Miles Jack. I don't see the Dolphins taking Miles Jack at number eight. The reason being is because
cornerback. You just killed Lewis.
I know.
I'm dead.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm dead, so don't talk to me. I'm dead.
Listen, truly stay to their best player available. Miles Jack should be the pick, but I have a feeling that they're not going to be able to do that because they just had that huge hole at cornerback. They had that huge hole at defensive line. They've already talked and rumbled in the front office about Cole Meacy moving back to the middle if all else fails. So they have that in their back pocket, and they're probably going to end up using it. Now,
in case they trade back for one of those corners?
Again, it all depends on free agency. The Dolphins are trying to, you know, shape themselves up for the draft. If they're going to go after defensive line in the first round, if they get their cornerbacks in free agency, I could totally see them trading down into the middle of the first round. If they don't get their guys, they might just stay at that top there and pick a cornerback at the number 8 spot. Every team pretty much wants to trade down. It's just a matter of getting the right value and the right deal and being able to trade down out of that spot while still feeling confident you can get your guy. Going back to the linebacker position, we talked about Bruce Irvin a lot. The Dolphins still are very high on him. They would like him, but listen, they're going to have huge competition from the Jacksonville Jaguars and Atlanta Falcons. Not because they both have money, but also because Dan Quinn was the defensive coordinator for Bruce Irvin in Seattle, and Gus Bradley was his defensive coordinator when he first came into the league before he went to the Jaguars and whatnot. So Bruce Irvin has a great relationship with both of them. Jacksonville right now is the favorite to land him. And if the Dolphins don't get him, it's not going to be because they didn't try. His salary floor right now is $9.5 million per year. You get 3 teams involved at least, and there will be more teams coming after him, including the Seahawks. And you're going to get that guy who's probably going to get $12 to $13 million per year, which would be more than Olivia Vernon's transitional tag price right now. So the Dolphins really need to ask themselves, is Bruce Irvin worth that much money? I'm having a tough time thinking that he might be. Vincent Ray has been named as a player who the Dolphins are going to go after, and that interest is extremely real. I would be surprised if he doesn't end up in Miami, but he is going to be a guy that's not going to be penciled in as a starter right away. He's going to have to compete with the rest of the guys to be a starter. He can play both inside and outside linebacker position, so he'll be another versatile guy for protection against Cole Meacy.
Is anyone else hating the Jacksonville Jaguars right now?
Yeah, they've lined themselves up for a nice free agency run, and their offense looks like it's set. I mean, you got Blake Bortles, you got Allen Robinson, you got the other guys there, you got your running back, you got T.J. Yeldon. Your offensive line is in pretty good shape, so they're going to have to pay
those guys.
Defense. Oh yeah, and they got the money to pay them too, which would just a little crazy. I mean, if they really think they're on the cusp of making the playoffs, their offense wasn't that bad last year. It was actually pretty good. So if they think they're just a few pieces away on defense from really turning the corner, why not go all in? And Shad Khan is not, you know, a cheap owner. He will spend the money to make it happen. The Dolphins are going to take the same approach. They really think their offense is pretty much set. They want to settle the offensive line dilemma before free agency begins. That includes making an offer to Jeff Schwartz if both sides feel comfortable with each other. And if not, they're going to attack very early. They're not going to see any big names coming on the offensive line. They're more talking about, like, Alex Boone from San Francisco, who is a decent player who can get the job done, or Jeff Schwartz, but a lower-tier guy like those players. No one that's going to be crazy. I know Zane Beadle's got released today. He was offered a contract with the Dolphins, I think, back in 2014, but his play has declined a bunch since that time. So it'll be interesting to see. I could also see the Dolphins really going after someone, the defensive tackle, not Malik Jackson, because he's going to cost a lot of money. His name is slipping me right now.
I can't
remember off the top of my head. But if I do remember it, I'll let you guys know. They also want to look at the safety position opposite Rashad Jones. They don't want somebody learning. They don't want Walt Akins back there making mistakes and learning on the job. Bruton, Iloko, or McLeod could be possibilities at the free safety position, and pairing them with Rashad Jones. They have so many holes on defense, but as one person told me the other day, Stephen Ross is not riding the season off. He wants to win, and he believes that they can win, and they will be very aggressive in free agency from the very first day.
He wants to win under the canopy. I don't blame him.
Yeah, he does. I mean, I don't know. There's a ton of holes. I suspect that they will, if they sign Schwartz or Boone, they're going to play on the right side of the line, I suspect. Then they'll let Turner, Douglas, battle it out, but I was also told that they will need to earn their spots as well. These of them are going to be handed to it. They're going to bring someone else in to compete with them, so they're going to have to battle that moving forward into training camp and leading up to the first regular season game.
I suspect they've got something good in Billy Turner. One question I have, so from everything I just gathered what you're talking about, their corner situation, is the number 8 pick, is that Vernon Hargreaves to lose?
Yeah, a lot of people are very high on Vernon Hargreaves, and someone I trust. I mean, I haven't done a lot of film work. I haven't done a lot of research on draft picks. I usually wait until free agency shapes itself out so I don't waste my time just specifically looking at what the Dolphins need. And, you know, let's say I'm looking at defensive line and they go out and re-sign Olivia Vernon and get another defensive lineman to come in. Well, then defensive lineman's off the table for the Dolphins in the draft pretty much. So, you know, I wait till free agency shakes out. A lot of people are very high on Vernon Hargreaves. Some are calling him the best cornerback in the class besides Jalen Ramsey, someone I trust a lot who has watched this kid since he came out of high school, since his freshman year, said that Vernon Hargreaves is not as good as everyone's making him out to be, and that he's suspecting he will go into the early part of the bottom of round one. So this guy has been on with a lot of his evaluations in the past, so I do have to trust him a little bit, even though he's going against the grain and rowing upstream. So I know a lot of fans are high on Vernon Hargreaves, but me personally, if I had to figure cornerback as the number 8 spot, if Jalen Ramsey is not available, I'm going with Mackenzie Alexander.
One of those. You're one of those guys. I think one thing that I've seen a little bit of, you've mentioned it on Twitter a bunch, is Vance Joseph and how he wants to use some zone coverage.
Right, with this defense. He wants to use a lot of zone coverage.
Yeah, and Vernon Hargreaves can play any scheme, but I think he's better right now as a zone corner. I think he'd be just fine in man, but I think that, like Mackenzie Alexander, I think his ceiling is in man coverage is pretty much sky high. I think he just has the raw skill.
I don't want anyone to misunderstand me. I'm not saying you pick Mackenzie Alexander in the first round, because Mackenzie Alexander is not going to go in the first round. But I'm
what
saying
you, mean?
You should pass up on someone like Vernon Hargreaves, let's say, to get a defensive lineman or possibly get Miles Jack at the number 8 spot and then come around back in round 2 or trade down in round 2 and get him in the middle of round 2 right there. But no, you're not wasting a first-round pick on Alexander because he's not going to go in the first round most likely.
No. Well, I know what you meant.
Yeah.
No, I'm right.
Will he last long enough that we can get in the and we have 2 picks in the top 40? Could we get them both? Because then I'd
his
be
okay
with it.
His interviews did not go well from what I've read.
Who's?
Mackenzie Alexander. It said
okay.
That a lot of teams came away. I mean, like, and that could, we're in the smokescreen season. Like I said, I don't have the sources you guys have. So I just sit there
right.
And read stuff, and then I just try to process it as I try to put it through a BS filter, if you will. And the one thing that I was able to take away, everything I've read the past couple of days, said that Mackenzie Alexander, I don't know if you guys saw his on-camera interview at the Combine, but, you know, just like he's a kid. He's cocky.
I thought he was very confident, and that's what I liked about him.
That's what I've heard. I've heard a lot of talk that people actually – I've heard the exact opposite. I've heard that he came off very well during a couple interviews. And that it's all about confidence. I mean, you look at that position, and around this time of year last year, people were knocking Marcus Peters, you know, talking about the same thing. I think when you
right.
go in this year, you know, if you watched Marcus Peters' college tape, he was getting chippy on every single play, talking trash the entire game. It didn't bother him. And you look at it, and when you're a rookie in the NFL and you're asked to line up against, you know, a six-year vet – you know, let's say you're in the AFC East, and let's say, you know, you're a rookie and you have to cover Brandon Marshall. You better have an attitude.
You better
be cocky.
You need to have that swag.
Yep,
no,
exactly.
I don't have a problem.
And that's what I've heard that Mackenzie Alexander comes off with. Ramsey, I mean, Hargreaves also. You look at Hargreaves, they're both chippy players. You know, Hargreaves
yeah.
is a little bit antsy. Sometimes downfield, but and so is Alexander. And I mean, that's kind of just how they play the game. But none of them are perfect prospects outside of Jalen Ramsey, who is as perfect of a prospect as I can remember watching. But it's very possible that that's a smoke screen and that it's not true. But I really, really, really doubt that he goes in the second round. I mean,
I think he's a mid first.
You know, I look at Eli Apple as the guy who could fall to the Dolphins in round two. That's more realistic. Or Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because those guys were early day two fringe. No, Apple was a fringe. Jackson was firmly in round two. And then, I mean, he was able to build himself up. I'm not saying all of Alexander's interviews were like that, but I read that two teams came away just thinking that he kind of came off as a dick. That was right. Pretty much like, that was the extent of it. But I also agree that if you're ever going to have that sort of that disposition, that sort of confidence, you need it at the cornerback spot and the quarterback spot. But I mean, you need that swagger. I mean, like what you mentioned with going up against guys like Brandon Marshall, you can't go in there tentative. I mean, you've got to be direct. You got to come correct, as people like to say. So, but that's simply what I had read. And I wasn't saying that Alexander would go at eight, but if you're talking about the guy who could be the best man corner in this draft, Mackenzie Alexander could be that guy. But, I mean, that's also the thing where if Vance Joseph wants to run a lot of zone, I don't think Mackenzie Alexander is a good zone corner. I don't like him in there, whereas where I watch Hargraves play and I say, that guy could play anywhere, but if I'm running a zone, that is absolutely a guy I want in there. And Eli Apple's going to be in there now, too. Yeah, he's fluid, but he's real sudden, too. I mean, if you're asking him to be able to sit down and be able to break on the ball, I mean, he's got that great burst. The long speed, I mean, you had, like, the initial times were 4.41, and then it came out that it was an official 4.5. He'll run faster at his pro day. Joe Hayden had the same thing. Joe Hayden's combine 40 was awful.
And there's a difference between being chippy and being willing to throw your body in the pile. I really like what I see from Hargreaves about being willing to, you know, throw himself in there and make plays. I mean, I watched the other night, I watched a few of his games, and it really stuck out to me watching the SEC championship game when they played Alabama, watching him go against Derrick Henry. And, you know, Derrick Henry is 6'2", 250 pounds. Jalen Ramsey is 5'10", and, I mean, maybe like 210 pounds. And he had no regard for his own health throwing himself there. And I like that, you know, seeing that from a player who knows the game is out of reach, who knows that he's just trying to stay healthy and get in the draft, who's still throwing himself at the Heisman running back full speed just to try to edge him out of bounds. You know, I really appreciate when you can see a player do that. When we signed Zach Bowman, I remember, I don't know if you guys remember, Zach Bowman will always stand out in my memory for when he played for the New York Giants and made one of the most blatant business decisions I've ever seen in my life against Marshawn Lynch. You know, he was the only guy standing between Marshawn Lynch and the end zone, and he should let Marshawn in. You know, there's no fight. And for a guy like Hargreaves, I'm not saying Alexander doesn't have it, but Vernon Hargreaves is willing to fight. And when you're a 5'10 guy and you're willing to go up against Derrick Henry, that I like that. I really like to see that.
He's built too. I mean, you had everyone commenting on that. The guy's built like an absolute tank.
Right. He's 220 pounds at 5'10".
I think he's 204.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt. I have to run again, but I just want to leave you with this. The Dolphins will be going after Tahir Whitehead from the Detroit Lions, outside linebacker. He was inserted into the starting lineup in the second half of last season, and Lions instantly improved their defense. Great in coverage, great tackler, great at stopping the run. He is an all-around linebacker. The Dolphins will be chasing him hard in free agency, so do keep your eyes open for that.
All right. Thanks for stopping by, Matt, and we look forward to doing this on a weekly basis. We'll try not to get so off-topic when you make your visit.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
So that's some interesting stuff there. So, I mean, like, you're seeing different opinions on Mackenzie Alexander. I love him as a man coverage guy. I don't love him as a zone corner. I don't even like him as a zone corner. Vernon Hargreaves is, I think, like, the best all-around guy. I would never call a cornerback a safe pick unless it's like a Jalen Ramsey who can, you know, play corner, play safety. But Vernon Hargreaves, I loved his interviews that he did. I mean, he just comes across as a sincere kid who just wants to play. And I always like that thing. It's kind of a cliche. Does he love football? You can tell that guy is just out there. He wants to play. He wants to be the best. He had a rough game against Michigan. I'm sure he's been asked about that probably a million times. Are you serious?
What?
Who is singing right now?
No one's singing. What are you talking about?
There's just like some sort of like thing that just came through there. Huh. Anyway, well, that was strange. I swear I didn't hear that. All right, we're back now.
Okay.
All right, we're back. So we've pretty much got, we'll say about, we'll do 5 or 6 minutes and then we'll go ahead and call it a night. We've already gone past our usual time, but is there, we've got somebody on hold.
Man, this is becoming a habit.
What's going on? Every time that, well, we've got so much going on that I look down at the caller board and I see that we have someone on hold. Man, you were on hold for a long time.
Over an hour.
I will give you the next 5 minutes to talk about whatever you want.
Okay. Well, I've been waiting to talk about Macy first off.
Okay.
In college, he was actually kind of like the jackknife type player. He wasn't really known as a pass rusher. He was known as a run stopper. So that's first off to clear out the case. That's why they moved him around. He played outside linebacker. He played inside linebacker. He played defensive tackle. And he played defensive end. That's the way that they have been supposed to use him the entire time that he's been drafted. But instead, they've just kind of like segmented him into a single position. And they do that a lot. They were supposed to do that with Deion Jordan. I understand he hasn't been healthy or he hasn't been sober, but supposed to do that with him also. As far as like the Kelvin Shepherds and all this other stuff, well, the problem is they're trying to fill a 4-3 hole with a 3-4 filler. You know, the last two linebackers that they assigned in free agency, whether it be him or whether it be Ellerby, are supposed to be 3-4 inside linebackers, which means they cover one portion, the other person covers the other, whatever. That's why they weren't successful. But Koemisi, the reason why he's just average is because they aren't utilizing him to the best of his capability. You know, he's basically supposed to be that guy that you can use in kind of like a 3-4 hybrid. Put him at defensive end, put him at linebacker, move him around, and that's where you'd see the most progress from him. And that's pretty much all I have to say on that one.
But you like the restructure. You're into it.
I'm into it as long as they take a long and hard look at how to make him productive. I've always, always wanted to see somebody utilize him correctly.
Well, supposedly Adam Gase wants to do the let's see what you can do and then work around it. So we'll see what happens there.
Mm-hmm. And as for Brent Grimes, I just $10 million and his wife and this and that is just too much. You know, I mean, it was okay when he was playing good. And I understand that he's been on an island and everything else. But, I mean, if you say that about him, you have to say that about everybody. And there comes a time where, you know, you just look at it and you say, is this really worth it?
It's worth it in only one sense, which is let's think back to when we didn't have Vontae Davis and we didn't have Brent Grimes and how bad that secondary was. I mean, we can't, the team cannot go back to that. Vance Joseph is a defensive backs coach. He will not go into next season with a poor group of personnel at that position. I can tell you, based on people I've talked to, if the team cannot replace Brent Grimes in free agency, they will not cut him. They aren't going to do it. They aren't going to mortgage the position just for their goal is not to trim salary cap. Their goal is, whether we agree with it here or not, and based on what Stephen Ross has said and based on what the team thinks, they are going to try to win in 2016. They will not go into the season without either a free agent replacement or Brent Grimes at corner. The goal is not to save cap space. You know, we've heard it this week about Cam Wake. They're not threatening to cut him. They're just trying to restructure and extend him. And the talks hitting a wall doesn't mean they're going to cut him. It just means maybe he's going to stay at his current cap hit. It's the team's goal is to win in 2016, whether we agree with it or not. You know, they're going to try to restructure Sue. They're going to try to restructure Wake. They're going to do all the things that we think are ill-advised, but we've never seen this organization before. You know, this grouping, you know, with Greer, Tannenbaum, Gase, Vance Joseph, Clyde Christensen. This grouping is new to us. We can't judge them based on what's happened in the past. You know, Stephen Ross, I think he's more hands-off than ever right now. But, you know, he can send a general message, and that general message is you better not be rebuilding, because he did that once. And he won't do it again. And, you know, in a way, it's rightfully so, because the team is talented. We have Ndamukong Suh in his prime. We have Rashad Jones in his prime. The offensive side of the ball could be so good next year, but it could be so good. So they're not going to mortgage the defense, because they don't really have to spend that much money on offense. You know, let's say they commit, you know, $3 or $4 million to Jeff Schwartz. Then they've got the O lineman. You know, they put a couple draft picks into it. Whatever they do on defense, I see restructuring Misi and bringing in a lot of guys for competition as a move for depth. You know, bringing someone in to compete, quote unquote, you know, you have a chance to end up being a depth player, which Miami desperately needs. I mean, we were starting, you know, Neville Hewitt showed a few flashes. Neville Hewitt should not have been on the field last year. It's injuries and it's poor talent at the position. And I just don't think it's going to happen again. I mean, they can focus all of their energy into the defensive side of the ball, because the offense is fine. You know, Ryan Tannehill, whether he is the guy or he isn't the guy, we're going to know this season. And after this season, he's in or out. But we're going to find out. And they're not going to go into next season with a bad defense, because they don't want to mortgage their last chance to find out.
All right, guys. It's been real, but I'm going to go ahead and fold it up for tonight. I want to thank our guest, Brian Witherspoon, for coming on. I love the fact that he stayed on with us as we kind of got into that whole Donnybrook discussion about ridiculous things. So that was cool that he was willing to do that. I want to thank Matthew Cannata, the Finsider Insider, I guess. We'll come up with something catchy. Appreciate him stopping by, giving us the latest Dolphins tidbits, rumors, news. That's always cool. I want to thank my usual panel of Lewis and Max. Thanks for doing the show with me. And we'll go ahead. And this show is going to stay on Thursdays, I think, until, well, the season starts September. So we'll be here for a while. So everyone who called in, I appreciate it. And we'll go ahead. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Thanks for tuning in.